Stop and think for a moment about all the characters in literature with disabilities. If you follow comic books and their characters, you can probably come up with Professor X, the founder of the X-Men, and then it's okay if you struggle a bit with the others. They are not numerous in literature, or have not been through much of history, but that appears to be changing. And the changes are tracked by our first guest. Betsy Wheeler is an associate professor of English at the University of Oregon. She specializes in disabilities in literature and is our guest for the monthly segment we call Curious, Research Meets Radio, a joint venture with the University of Oregon. Dr. Wheeler, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Nice to be with you.
Is it fair to say that characters with disabilities are generally not well represented historically in literature?
Yeah, absolutely. The ones that I can think of, they're often there in order to do something for the non-disabled characters. Like if you think about Tiny Tim in A Christmas Carol, he's there to show us that Scrooge is a bad person or a good person instead of being a character in his own right.
Oh, so when Scrooge is the bad person, he practically, well, not quite, you know, technically wants to kick the crutch away from Tiny Tim, but he's moved by Tiny Tim when he turns good.
Exactly.
So I mean, what made this a central focus of your studies?
Well, it brings together a bunch of different things that I care a lot about. I have taught young adult and children's literature for a long time. I am also very concerned with the social welfare of all kids, and I'm very interested in disability and the field of disability studies. I have a neurological disorder myself, and I also am the parent of children with disabilities, and so it's a personal and political and intellectual thing for me.
So once you began to delve into it, which direction did you turn? Did you look at the stuff that was out there currently, or did you go back in time?
I started looking at the stuff that was out there currently, partly because nobody had really been writing about it, and also because I had children of my own that I was reading with, and I started to notice that things really changed around the same time as you start to get Americans with Disabilities Act and disability activism, that in young adult and children's literature, you start to see a big change where there are main characters with disabilities and they are the characters that the reader is supposed to identify with, and they're portrayed as whole people. I'd say the first one I noticed like that was The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, it's an English book about a boy who's probably on the autism spectrum, and he is extremely charming and engaging to the reader. The book is just a really good read, and it was a huge success in both England and the U.S., and it has since become a play both on Broadway and in London's West End. And then there just started to be another book and another book and another book, things like Wonder and The Fault in Our Stars and Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian.
I was going to ask you about Wonder because it's been made into a movie that's just about to be released. Tell us about the original story there.
I will say that one thing they did that I'm a little disappointed in is that in the book, the mom is Latina, and so the boy in Wonder is half Latino, and I'm kind of sorry that they whitened that up a little bit. And, of course, it would have been great if somebody who actually had Treacher-Collins syndrome could play the part, but we won't ask for everything. The book itself, one of the things that really interested me in the book itself was how Augie, the main character, and his friends and his family use bathroom humor to try to rehearse getting him ready to go to school for the first time and face the public. He's kind of hidden his face as a younger kid, and when he gets to school, he does encounter a lot of bullying and a lot of staring, but he also has allies who help him figure out how to make light of it, how to come back at people, how to assert himself. And that's something that I think is very realistic in terms of what I also see with the families with disabilities in my own life.
Betsy Wheeler is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Associate Professor of English at the University of Oregon, has done a lot of research into characters with disabilities in literature and notices a rise in their incidence. You can join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned the main character in Wonder, and I was going to ask if you had any concerns about the film treatment, and you have at least one. Mm-hmm. Treacher-Collins syndrome, is this the same syndrome that was depicted in the movie Mask, 25, 30 years ago?
I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Okay. All right. But interesting. So it made me realize that there have been other depictions as well. But
that's right.
But it seems like through a lot of literature history, it was, and you mentioned that the one-dimensional characters that are really just there to show something in somebody else. My mind goes particularly this time of year to Mr. Potter. And It's a Wonderful Life, you know, the evil guy in the wheelchair. There's often a scheming person in a wheelchair, it seems like, through a lot of 20th century literature and movies.
Yeah, I remember when the Da Vinci Code first came out that there's a society of people who have albinism who were saying that the number of albinos who are villains in Hollywood movies is just vastly overrepresented compared to albinism in the population.
Oh, really? So they show up more often on this on screen then?
Yeah. So much more, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it makes it really easy. There's actually some critics who call this narrative prosthesis, that it's kind of a crutch that the plot can use and say, oh, well, he's a really bad guy because he's so bitter by how people treat him because he has this disability and people treat him like a monster. So he became a monster. And so it's just another way that you can kind of dehumanize people, is kind of using them as a plot twist.
It's funny you mention that, because I'm remembering at the moment that you say this about the fact that one of the original versions of Lex Luthor in the comic books, Superman's nemesis, was that he was angry because Superboy had accidentally made him bald.
Well, that seems a little small-minded.
It does, doesn't it? You know, you're going to become an evil genius just because you're angry about your hair?
Yeah. I mean, I have those days, but I try to get over it and, you know, go high instead of low.
So, Betsy, does it appear that the greater frequency of characters who are fully fleshed out with disabilities in literature is due to a greater awareness of people with disabilities generally in society? I mean, is this reflective of a good trend in all of us?
I think so. And I think what happened was a whole bunch of disability rights laws and the disability rights movement. So people are more understood because they're just out in public more. Kids are in the mainstream classrooms. They're finally in the same schools with other kids. We've had a couple of generations where that's the case, where young people are growing up where they're more likely to be around peers with disabilities. And a lot of folks, not just in the U.S., but around the world, have worked very hard to make that happen.
You mentioned that that some of the stories that are showing up with more developed characters with disabilities are showing up in young adult and children's literature as well. And how young are we talking about? Are we talking about even books to be read to little children?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a book series that I like. Oh, one of them is called, I think it's just called Having Fun, and they're board books for babies, but they just happen to show, there'll be, you know, a kid who's playing who has a hearing aid, and there'll be another kid who uses a walker, you know, but it's not referred to at all in the text. It's just another kind of baby who's rolling around having fun.
Is that the approach that is desired eventually, where it's just not a question? I mean, that people are just going to have different sets of circumstances about them.
Yeah, I think so. I think we need both kinds of books. We definitely need the ones that I call casual inclusion, where it's just part of the scene. And then we also need the books that talk about, as it does in Wonder, of how that confront prejudice and how it feels on the inside to have prejudice directed at you and to have barriers and so forth. But I think we need to be able to see it as very normal, and then also see the ways in which we need to make it more normal.
You've written that the growing centrality of characters with disabilities depathologizes disability. Could you unpack that term for us a bit?
Oh, boy, that really is professor speak, isn't it?
Hence the question.
Sorry about that. Basically, I just mean that, let's see, let me think, that disability is perceived as just a normal part of human existence that affects a lot of people, and more of us if we're lucky enough to get older, and that there's nothing wrong with it. It doesn't necessarily require a cure or any kind of drastic treatment. It just calls for all of us to make a little more social room.
So in a sense, it negates the question, what's wrong with you? Because the correct answer is nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
Betsy Wheeler, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange in our Curious segment, Curious, where research meets radio, our joint venture with the University of Oregon. She is an associate professor of English there and has mapped the fact that characters with disabilities fully fleshed out are showing up more and more in literature, including for very, very young readers or people being read to, even. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Add some perspective to this. Talk about things that you like to read that have shown up characters with disabilities. Or if you have a disability yourself, what your thoughts are about what you're seeing in literature these days. We'd love to hear from you. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. And I did notice, Betsy, that you look at writers from several different countries. I mean, how wide-ranging are the attitudes towards people with disabilities in the works that you look at?
Well, they're very wide-ranging. For instance, well, I look at books from the United Kingdom, the United States, and then I also venture out into some other countries as well. And one of the chapters is about a picture book from Ghana called Sosu's Call by Meshaka Zare. And it's a really interesting book because the more research I did, the more I realized that there was a huge disability rights movement in Ghana and that this book was partly intended to support those kinds of changes that were happening. And what you have in this book is that you have a young boy in a village, a seaside village, and what is holding him back are people's prejudices in terms of superstitions. Like they believe that the lake god will be angry if that boy goes out and becomes a fisherman like his dad. He's a kid where he can't walk. That's his problem. And they say, no, he can't be out on the lake because the gods won't like it. So that's a particular kind of prejudice that you might have in one place, whereas in our country we might have different kinds of prejudices. And he shows the village how capable he is because there's a flood and there's a bunch of old people and children trapped in the village, and he needs to contact the men who are out in fishing boats and the women who are out in the fields to get them to come back and rescue everybody. And so he and his dog crawl to the drum shed and bang on the drums and get people to come back to town and save everybody. And they finally realize this is a capable guy. And it somewhat replicated what was going on in Ghana, that more and more village chiefs were starting to be leaders, to see that people with disabilities could be included, that kids with disabilities should be able to go to school. So in some ways it's like here, but something's very different. Ghana is a country where it is very hard to get access to a wheelchair at all. So whereas a child who doesn't have much money in the United States, it might take some red tape and paperwork, but they can get a wheelchair after a year or two's wait. But in Ghana, they are exceedingly rare. So there are some material circumstances that make things different in different places.
But it sounds like from the theme of the story, the obstacle he has to overcome is people thinking that because he's got a disability that he is disabled.
Yeah,
which
right.
Hangs on in a lot of the world still, I imagine.
Yeah, including here. Mm-hmm. but yeah, there it's really about... And I think it often is. I mean, if you ask most people with disabilities, you know, what's the biggest problem, most of them will say it's the social barriers rather than the impairment itself.
So it's not even the physical barriers, which are being taken away as the more things come into compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, but just the way that people feel about people with disabilities?
Yeah, and it can be really subtle things. Sometimes it's in the physical space. Right here at University of Oregon, we have classrooms that are still not wheelchair accessible. Somehow there's a loophole in the ADA that allows that to happen. So you can show up for a class in the lecture hall in volcanology, for instance, and you could wait for years in front of that elevator because it's not coming.
Oh, wow. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Eugene, we have a call from Howard in Eugene who wants to join the conversation. Welcome to the Exchange in our Curious segment with Betsy Wheeler, the associate professor and associate professor of English at the University of Oregon. Hi, Howard.
Hello. I wanted to bring one point up. There's this misperception that a lot of people in real life and supposedly, I guess, also in literature who have either high-functioning autism or Asperger's syndrome don't have either an appreciation of humor or a sense of humor, and I'd like to see some fictional character with either high-functioning autism or Asperger's who displays both an appreciation of humor and sense of humor, you know, smart-alecky, wise-cracking, wise guy in perhaps the Hawkeye Pierce tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the question, Howard. Appreciate it. Betsy, take it from there.
Oh, that is fantastic. I want to see that, too, because one of the things that bothered me about Curious Incident, actually, is that the jokes are kind of at the main character's expense, that it's often he doesn't get something that the reader can see, and that's the source of the humor. And, Howard, I agree with you absolutely. And I will rack my brain to see if I can think if there are any examples of that out there. Nothing is coming to mind right now, but you've definitely given me something to chew on there.
There might be one here suggested by Joy and Talent in an email. She wants to know if you've read The Rosie Project and its sequel. It's about a professor with Asperger's who decides to get married.
No, I have not.
Okay, The Rosie Project. I have to look that up myself. We're talking to Betsy Wheeler, an associate professor of English at the University of Oregon, in our Curious segment where research meets radio. She's done a lot of research into disabilities in literature. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So let's talk a bit about your own book scheduled to come out next year. I'll let you pronounce the title, and you can tell us what it means.
I will. It's called Handyland, the Crippest Place on Earth. And I actually, as of day before yesterday, finished the manuscript. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, wow. That must be a load off.
Oh, man. There have been these ideas I've been carrying around in my head for years that I don't have to inventory anymore because they're on the page.
All right. Manuscript turned in. So then how much editing before the book comes out?
I'm not quite sure. It's going to go out to some more expert reviewers, and I'm really hoping that they just put a big rubber stamp of approval on it, but I know that they'll probably want more changes.
Yeah, probably. So Handyland, the Crippest Place on Earth, about what?
Yeah. Well, it is, well, let's see. I think I'll go back and tell you where I got the word Handyland from. I have this really great group of moms that I hang out with. We all are mothers of kids with disabilities, and, you know, it's one of those groups where you could meet somebody and not speak the same language anywhere in the world, and immediately you would have something to say to that person. And so we have this great group, and my friend Cindy and I have boys who are almost exactly the same age, and their disabilities are very similar, too. And we had talked, starting from when our boys were little, about what the perfect world would look like for our families. You know, that everything, well, in our case, it's families with wheelchairs, so everything would be ramped, and there would be a playground right in the middle of the community where our kids could play as independently as possible, where, you know, there's a nap room where somebody can always be taking a nap, and the bathrooms are nice and big, and there's a wheelchair repair studio right there where you live. So we started talking about this, and Cindy was telling a friend of hers about it, and Cindy said, oh, you could call it Handyland. And so that's what Handyland is. It's like the ideal place for kids and young adults with disabilities and their families. And the book is looking at how can literature help us get there, like how can it help us picture and imagine that best possible world, and then also looking at the things where the real world falls very short. One of the things that really inspired me to write the book was that I came across a statistic that sexual abuse rates are much, much, much higher for kids with disabilities than for non-disabled kids. And that was so shocking to me that, and then I thought, well, of course, you know, they're more vulnerable. And the more vulnerable the kid is, like if they're nonverbal, if they have an intellectual disability, the more likely the abuse is. And it just, that just flattened me. And it made me think about how bad things can be and how good things can be, and how can we move them more toward the good.
So I notice it's not the happiest place on earth. I guess that's been taken. The crippest place on earth.
Yeah. So CRIP is a term that we use in the disability studies community, that it's kind of like queer. It's like, it's one of those where you take back the term.
You re-own it, yeah. Mm-hmm. It becomes
yours.
Yeah,
yeah. So you can talk about cripping something, you know, that you can put a disability spin on it. And of course, I'm thinking about hippest too. But I came up with that subtitle because I realized, completely unbeknownst to me, that I had organized the book as if it were Disneyland.
That's not a big surprise, is it?
Not huge, but I had no idea that my Southern California childhood had warped me that badly.
All right, so you stayed bent by what it gave you. You know, I've been asking questions, Betsy, about literature. If we expand the term literature to include all media, I mean, given
sure.
the fact that anybody with a phone can now essentially reach the entire world, what
yeah.
do you see out there in depictions of people with disabilities?
Oh, there's so much cool stuff happening. I really enjoy the blogosphere and YouTube. There's wonderful stuff going on. I just was reading up on some different the responses of some different people with autism when the movie Frozen came out. And it kind of goes to what Howard said, that there's plenty of people on the spectrum out there who have a great sense of humor. So there's some great commentary out there on how they identified with the character Princess Elsa in Frozen, that they saw her as kind of as someone on the spectrum in a way, because everybody's always trying to contain her hands.
Uh-huh, right.
And let's see, what else would I say? There's tons of young YouTubers with disabilities who can just tell you so much about their lives. So there's great stuff out there.
Betsy, just a few seconds left. Can you tell us a little bit about Living Theater, which you produce and write plays for?
Oh, I would love to. Living Theater is a class. It's a University of Oregon class. We'll be doing it again starting this March. It is half U of O students in the class, and it is half adults from the community with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And we come together, we tell each other our life stories, and we turn it into a play and produce it.
Wow, you do stay busy, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Betsy Wheeler is an associate professor of English at the University of Oregon, specializing in disabilities and literature, and finding a lot more of people with disabilities in literature. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.
You bet. Our monthly segment is called Curious Research Meets Radio. We visit with a professor at the University of Oregon about some cool stuff going on there, and that is some cool stuff.